You know, folks, what we attain too cheaply, we often esteem and appreciate too lightly. I want our brother to tell us a little bit about his experiences from Normandy to the Battle of the Bulge. Would you do that?
Well, it's a little emotional for me, and I don't know how good I'm going to do it, so bear with me. First, I thought I might like to say a few things about some of the lighter things that we saw in service. Naturally, a bunch of young kids and tricks. Things I know, well, some of you that would remember what short sheeting is. You would take the guy that was going to be out late, you'd undo his bunk, fold his sheets up, remake his bunk, and when he came in that night, his feet wouldn't go any further than the middle of the bunk. So he would have to tear his bunk apart and remake it. Oh, then there was things like in the middle of the winter, guy that was sleeping real fast, real hard, we'd take his bunk up, take him outside, and set him outside in the cold weather. And in 2 or 3 minutes, he was storming into the barracks trying to drag his bunk back in. Oh, another little thing called itching powder. Guy that wasn't going to be there, you dump the itching powder all in his bunk. And after he slid in there, it was only about 30 seconds before the bunk come flying apart and a few choice words that you can't use in here this morning. But that was one of the things, I was born and raised in Florida. I had never seen snow when I went overseas. And this was the coldest winter in Europe in 50 years. Got well below zero. And this particular period, I don't think I had been able to wash up or change uniform or anything for about 3 weeks. So I got me a helmet full of snow. And you guys, some of you remember the little stoves we had that you... We used the helmets for everything. We even cooked in them. And anyway, I get a helmet full of snow, set it on the little stove, and I go to my half track to try to get some soap and stuff, you know, I was going to wash with. And so when I come back, of course, there's a little puddle of water in the bottle of my helmet. So I'm accusing everybody of stealing my water. That's what I knew about snow. When it melted, I mean, you know, there wasn't much left of it. So there was a lot of humor. You had to look at the funny things sometime. Now some of the things, a few things I might say here, I say not for myself, but for all the guys that came marching down the aisle there. As I said, I was sent to the 10th Armored Division at Fort Benning for our training, and we had maneuvers in Tennessee. And when the time came to our POE, which is our port of embarkation in New York, we were a pretty big ship. It was about a 35,000-ton ship. We had 8,000 men aboard. And we pulled out into the East River and ran on a sandbar. And for 2 days, they had about 25 tugs on the ship trying to get it off the sandbar, and they couldn't get it off. So there in a driving rainstorm, we had to debark from that ship and get on another one. And of course, then everything was in convoy. And the convoy had to go and leave us, of course, because they couldn't wait on the one ship. And the only thing we had with us at that time was a Canadian Corvette, which I'm sure Tom knows what a Canadian Corvette is. It's a smaller ship than a destroyer that was with us for protection, but since we were a fast ship, why, there was no real danger from the subs because we could outrun them. And so, as I said, thank goodness we weren't there on D-Day, but we landed in the city of Cherbourg, which was at the tip of the Normandy Peninsula after it was taken. And we spent about a month in Normandy getting equipment, and we were put in General Patton's Third Army at the time of the breakout, and One of the things that this of course was one of the bitterest things. I mean, that we, the first day on D-Day, we lost 5,000 men. The first month, we lost 12,000 men. And at the breakout that day, that they were going to have to do what they call carpet bombing. And you guys in the Air Force probably know the term, that they chose in the southern half of the peninsula there to send in 3,000 bombers and carpet bomb a 10-mile area for the breakout, which for the most part was successful. They did some of the smoke signals. The wind blew them the wrong way. They dropped bombs short and killed about 700 men. But anyway, the breakout, and we went across France and ended up in the city of Metz. If maybe some of you know where that is. It's in kind of in northeastern France. Very heavily fortified, an old city. And we had just participated in the capture of that and had gotten a few days rest and getting new equipment. And on the morning of December 16th, 1944, at 6 o'clock in the morning, the Germans started the counterattack, which became known as the Battle of the Bulge. And in this area, this 80-mile-long area that they came in, we only had four divisions in there. Two of them were green off the boat, and there was two that was re-equipping and resting. So, and they hit with 18 divisions, seven of them armored, and so they played havoc with the four divisions in there. They pretty well chewed them up, but there was instances of individual squads and companies that fought very good and were able to slow them down. And so things, of course, were very chaotic, as a lot of you guys know, that the war isn't like what you see on TV sometime. I mean, it's like any other government-run operation. It's a mess, you know? So anyway, it started on the morning of December 16th, and Eisenhower had told Patton, he says, you'll have to have an armored division in Bastogne within 24 hours. And of course, good old George being him, he says, I'll have one there in 12. And that was us. So the temperature was below zero, very, very cold. And so we took out of Metz and started north. It took us, about 18 hours. It was about 100 miles. Bastogne was about 100 miles north of Metz. And a third of our division, armored divisions are divided into three combat commands. And a third of our division went into Bastogne and was there 5 days before the 101st Airborne came in. Of course, they had the commanding general with General McAuliffe. I'm sure some of that name is familiar with some of you, that during the battle when the Germans demanded surrender, why his famous word of nuts. Of course, we thought it was a different word, but that's neither here nor there. But anyway, we got there, and the rest of us were supposed to go in. They couldn't get any reinforcements in. But finally, the weather cleared, and the Air Force was able to come in with their fighter bombers and their supply transports and get supplies into Bastogne itself. You know, this battle, it was 7 weeks. It was known as the biggest battle in the history of the world. It lasted basically 7 weeks. We lost 56,000 men. And as I said, it was so cold and very heavy snow. And many of the guys that fell, they were covered with snow, and they really didn't find them until 7 weeks after the battle was over and the snows began to melt. And So after we finally drove them back and went on into Germany and crossed the rivers, crossed the Rhine. Our division, after crossed the Rhine, we cut south into Bavaria, and we ended up right on the Austrian border in a little town called Garmisch. It's where the 1936 Winter Olympics were held, where Sonja Henie won all of her titles. And that's where we were when the war ended. I might mention I saw General Patton twice at the beginning when we landed in Normandy, and he called all the regimental battalion and divisional officers to a meeting. And of course, I cannot use he used the colorful language. He was every bit of what you've heard and read about him. He had his pearl-handled pistols, and he used the language. And his basic message to the divisional commanders was, in my army, you will stop for two reasons. If you run out of gas and you're just getting the H shot out of you. And he says, that's the two reasons you'll stop in my army. And he meant it. I mean, and they had to, Eisenhower at times had to worry about it because he was always in his tank. He was wanting to get up right up the front and lead the guys in, you know. But and then right after the war was over, for 2 or 3 months later, we had a little German circus come, and we had the activation of our division celebration, and he came. And he came to, actually, he was the first divisional commander of our division when it was formed at Fort Benning. And so he came, and he was every bit, when the show was over and he came out of the stadium, of course, he had all of his MPs and his entourage with him. And there was, of course, hundreds of us GIs trying to take pictures and things. And of course, the GI, he had a German Mercedes two-seater touring car, his staff car. And of course, the MPs was shooing us all back to, you know, get back. And so he got up and stood up in his car, and the windshield was an upright windshield. And he grabs hold of the windshield and shouts to the MPs, again in some of his colorful languages, in essence, to, you know, get back. Let them come in and take all the pictures they wanted. So he stood there for 15, 20 minutes while we were there and taking pictures. And of course, we were already scheduled there. I'd already begun to form plans that we were going to leave Germany and come back through the States to go to the Pacific for the invasion of Japan, of course, which, thank gosh, we didn't have to make because they had predicted there would be 1 million casualties there. But I just, as I say, anything I've said is for all the guys that came down the aisle. And there was a lot of terrible sacrifices, a lot of terrible bloodletting and things that I won't go into a lot of it. But a lot of wonderful young kids that never had a chance to live their lives. And I just hope that you can remember that and remember them in your prayers.
Seven-week battle, 56,000 dead, many of them about the age of this pew right here. So when you look at some of us who are gray, don't write us off. Because of sacrifice you just heard, you can get in a car and drive on the freeway. We have a lot to be thankful for in our communion time. Let's sing and talk about it.